Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Glad to have you all with us today. This was another day where we went through a weekend. If you're listening in real time, our Monday show today, we got a lot to catch up on. Took place over the weekend, certainly in national news, but also news that relates very specifically to the state of Georgia in many ways. We've got a small team to start the show today. Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the AJC, as he usually is with us on this Monday afternoon show. He's in the paper on Wednesdays and Sundays, and he's always available on the Political Insider blog, part of Politically Georgia.
Good afternoon.
There's we just got, why don't we introduce her, Jim Galloway? Senator Nan Orrick has just entered the studio. We're so glad to have you here. She always keeps us guessing.
Good to be here despite Atlanta traffic.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Nan. It's great to have you here. And we're really pleased to have back with us today at the microphone Republican strategist Todd Rehm. He also is known to many of you as the editor and compiler of stories for GeorgiaPundit.com, which is a great way to keep track of what's going on in the state of Georgia politically. Galloway, just to finish up with you, before the end of the show, we want to hear a little preview of what you've got coming up on Wednesday. So we'll do that later.
Okay, all right.
We want to hear about it, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
All right. So let's get started. This weekend, clearly the headlines were still, the news was dominated by the horrible, horrible shooting in Florida. And I want to talk about it in terms of the national news, but we should also talk about it in terms of what's going on right here in Georgia. Mm-hmm. Jim, the AJC on Sunday, yesterday, had a front page, a big takeout on how Georgia schools are reacting to all of this. But you read the story and see the concerns of parents, of administrators, of students themselves, teachers, and there's a lot of questions, but not a whole lot of answers, I think it's safe to say. Am I characterizing that correctly?
Yeah, and I will tell you what, at least in my house, it's getting very, very specific.
Yeah, you have a teacher.
I have a teacher, and who was a high school student during Columbine, and now is on the kind of the teacher end of things. And one thing she pointed out was that the one teacher in Florida was in a classroom where the door opens to the outside and the only lock is on the outside.
And that was the teacher who I think shepherded his students into the classroom.
Then closed the door.
And had to lock it from the outside.
And had to lock himself out. He was and he died.
He was killed.
And my daughter has the same door.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nan Orrick, what's the conversation down at the legislature? Even forgetting for a moment about, you know, gun safety legislation, just the general talk among your colleagues, your fellow legislators down there.
Well, there have not been a lot of public comments made. We do have gun control bills, gun safety bills that are needing hearings, needing public input. We've got legislation to ban the bump stock, which of course appeared in the high headlines after in the midst of the Vegas country music concert shooting, banning automatic weapons. Mary Margaret Oliver over in the House has been carrying the banner on that, HB 10. And there is much unrest, I think, among students. I think we're going to see really student voices driving this conversation.
Right. There are two things happening on this in that respect. Number one, we're going to have a first test of just general interest in the gun issue on Wednesday at the state capitol.
That's right.
You've got a group called Moms Demand Action.
That's right.
They had already scheduled this. Mm-hmm. This rally had already been scheduled.
Yes.
But if you go to their Facebook page, you see that they're saying that interest has picked up quite
That's
a bit.
Right.
And then you also have, I haven't heard any Georgia teachers say they're ready to join it, but There's a momentum forming for a work stoppage, a teacher's work stoppage in late April.
I think that was on the 24th. Uh-huh. And there's a school walkout. February 14th is a date, and then there's a date in Washington, I believe maybe the 23rd. And these are very eloquent statements coming from the students and touching and arousing, I think, others across our state and nation.
Just March 14th, not February 14th, for that the date for that rally, and just
March. And then and they're going to be down this Wednesday at 10 o'clock at Liberty Plaza, Moms.
Todd, the AJC article pointed out something interesting, I thought, that the number of disciplinary incidents involving handguns in Georgia public schools has increased from 76 during 2014 school year to just about double that, to 149 last year. So, I mean, we're having a lot of incidents. But as I listen to Jim and Nan talk, and talk about the growing protests, I wonder if there's any going to be any coalescing around a certain, what's the solution? Are we talking about more stepped up security with armed guards? Are we talking about gun safety? It's an awfully broad area.
So I'm going to just give some of my own personal thoughts. I don't think that there is a quick technological or sales ban kind of a solution. I had a friend a few years ago who, after he had children, was thinking about how to make his home safe when he was a gun owner, and he asked what he should buy. And the answer was that gun safety is not a single object you buy. It's a set of behaviors and habits and mindfulness. And I think that we are beyond a simple fix like that. I think that if you look at the statistic you just cited, I think that we've seen a rise in the glorification and the acting out of antisocial behaviors in a variety of different ways. That is one manifestation of it, increased acting out in schools. I think increased acting out of children in public, increased disrespect towards adults are all part of this of a spectrum of behaviors that have unfortunately become glorified. And I'm going to quote one of my favorite movies, Full Metal Jacket, in which the gunnery sergeant says, "The rifle is only a tool. It's your hard heart that kills." And what we have done, unfortunately, I think, as a society, is we have raised a generation that is much more likely to have the willingness to turn on its fellow man.
A generation, that's a pretty broad, sweeping condemnation. I think that we have faltered and failed on understanding mental health issues with young people. I'll tell you, there's a school here in town, Drew Charter, and they have ramped up school psychologists, school social workers, school counselors, and they have 100% of their kids going on to secondary education of some sort. And that's because these children have been intensively surrounded with resources to keep them on a path, you know, aside from what's going on in their home, aside from the messages they get from society. A place that is stocked and staffed to provide resources for children other than police officers with guns.
Well, I don't hear you then disagreeing with what Todd is basically saying. Todd is talking about an environment in which we have young people who are disaffected, alienated,
I will tell you what I would go like you said, Todd. This is not one single issue. And
right.
Yes, have we desensitized people? Yes. But yes, have we begun the industrial production of firearms that have much more power and much more lethality?
I'll say two things. I'd say that surrounding them with adults who care and are equipped to make a difference during the school hours is a great thing. But then we've got to remember that they're going to go out and they're going to spend the next 8 to 12 waking hours immersed on the internet, on Twitter, which is the height of antisocial behavior, not necessarily killing, but disrespectful behavior, and in the mass media that glorifies people who are mass murderers. We have had in the last 5 years at least two that I can think of major Hollywood productions that had as the protagonist a serial killer. And if we can agree that there is a problem of a sickness of the heart and mind, I think we need to talk not just about the 8 or so hours spent in school, but the next 8 hours spent in front of screens of various.
But all of that is about investing in youth. And I will say to you, when President Reagan was almost killed in cold blood by a madman, we passed the Brady Bill. That's the only time in modern history that we have reformed our gun laws at the federal level. We control and regulate everything else, but we refuse, because of this heavily funded, hard right-wing NRA, to control the access and use of guns.
If I may, let me see if I can get a little specificity around separating out what are a variety of issues here. So, starting with this, last week, after the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, there were conversations taking place among school administrators there, others in the community there, about adding armed guards, armed police officers, as a daily component to the school. Jim, there are schools here already, I believe, that
we have armed law enforcement. We call them resource officers.
All right. Do we imagine, on one hand, just in terms of that part of safety, that we could expect to see more schools opting? I mean, I know this is speculation, but that's one way to go, having an armed cop in your hallway.
It's one way to go, and it is an expense that you'll find that a lot of school systems in Georgia can't afford.
Right, right.
And
Metro Atlanta, we're good. We can do that.
Yeah,
that's where they are.
Remember, we're a state that has been furloughing classroom teachers and paraprofessionals over this period of the last 8 years or so. To spend more resources on more cops in schools, all of these things, I believe, Bill, are workarounds to the fact that politically our politicians won't act.
Nevertheless, there's going to be an outcry, I would think, for more ways to protect students in schools, including armed police officers in the schools.
And I'd say if you've got that money to invest in the counselors, professionals, social workers, et cetera. We now have double the number of students assigned to counselors. Double of what the national average is supposed to be. It's up in the high 400s per counselor in our public school system.
All right, so another approach, Todd, is to see legislation that curtails certain purchases, some gun purchases, gun safety measures, gun control measures. Nan Orrick already mentioned bump stock legislation. Mary Margaret Oliver has here. But we're not going to see any gun safety bills pass in the Georgia legislature this session or next.
I don't think we're likely to see any of those pass, and a couple of other things. I don't think that the answer is to increasingly harden our schools. That might be something that we need to do today, but do we really want to make that a permanent part of our society, is heavily armed schools, not just for the cost, but for the corrosive effect that probably has. The other part of this is, and I keep going back to, there's not a simple answer. Getting rid of a particular style of gun is not really going to work, because there's already a bunch of them out there, and there's a lot of other substitutes that will work just as well. If the AR-15 is no longer available, there are other guns that do the exact same thing that just simply have different names or different physical characteristics. The other problem is, there are a lot of people talking about, well, you know, when somebody is obviously crazy, we need to take them off the streets. And that's not a society I want to live in either. And so we have limited, by the Constitution and by a lot of our civil rights, a lot of the tools for attacking different parts of this problem.
So, Jim, here's what's interesting to me. Georgia state law says that you cannot buy a pistol legally until you're 21 years old, but an 18-year-old can legally purchase a long gun. Now, I assume that the reasoning behind that legislation is to allow 18-year-old kids to go hunting, right? Probably exactly why that, mm-hmm. that legislation was handled the way it was? But that opens the door for the AR-15 and other weapons that, in fact, can do a lot of damage very, very quickly.
Right. And to Todd's point, I would agree that, yeah, there are a lot of guns out there already. And so any restriction on renewal of an assault ban is going to take decades to be felt. But I would say that if you're an 18-year-old who cannot buy liquor or beer, can't buy a 6-pack of beer, who can't rent a car, who can't engage in many forms of contracts, then maybe you shouldn't be able to possess an AR-15 or something or a firearm with high capacity magazines.
Well, the problem with magazines is that they're interchangeable by design, and so you would be talking about not just restricting certain firearms, but also certain firearm accessories.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If somebody's dad has or mom has a high capacity magazine, you can outlaw the kid being in possession of it as much as you want, but it's going to have about as much efficacy as laws against that kid stealing Boone's Farm wine from the back of his parents'
liquor cabinet. But do you see where we're going here? We're going into the same circle that we've been in, where we throw up all these reasons why life can't change.
Yeah, and I think people are really, Jim, looking to politicians to come up with answers, not more excuses. And that's what you're hearing certainly from those students. And when you look and see who the NRA has given money to, I mean, let's be very, very candid here. There's a huge munitions industry that is funding the heck out of the NRA and that is fueling a lot of fantasy gun lover sorts of things. And they want us to be talking about how there's really no way to handle this. But you can look at other nations that have taken firm steps, like Australia, after they had a mass shooting. And they said, hey, we're changing our laws. And their numbers, their fatalities, their incidents are now different than they were then.
All right. Let's turn, you know, you brought it up, Nan, and I want to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
We on the show Friday, there was this kind of consensus at the table, Jim, you were here, that the aftermath of this incident feels a little different. It feels like there is more concern being expressed, that it might have a longer life. Maybe people have reached a tipping point where they really want to see something done. And one of the most fascinating things to watch is how quickly students at that high school have become energized and organized mm-hmm. to take on the issue of gun safety. And we've been told from the beginning when the incident happened that this is a school with smart students. It's a high-performing school, one of the best schools in the state, maybe in the country. And just this weekend, we heard some of those young people from the school show up on all of the news programs. Let's just listen to Emma Gonzalez, one of those students.
Politicians who sit in their gilded House and Senate seats funded by the NRA telling us nothing could have ever been done to prevent this. We call BS. We say that they say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS. They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS. They say guns are just tools like knives and are as dangerous as cars. We call BS.
Todd, just before we went on the air, I was watching an interview on one of the cable shows with one of her classmates, a young man. He was so articulate.
Mm-hmm.
He was so focused. He was so certain of the direction he wants to go with other students his age to try to change the equation about guns. Is this a budding new political interest group that politicians are going to have to start paying attention to, or is this a flash in the pan?
I will start paying attention to both the millennial generation and the folks who follow when they start showing up at the voting booth. And the numbers simply don't bear out that they're demanding action at the ballot box in the way that they are on that particular broadcast. But at the same time, these are the same types of people who at least two of the folks at this table think are not mature enough to possess hunting weapons, who some of the other folks here want to regulate. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying that youth has advantages. You know, the energy, the idealism, the certainty that
That's
you
right.
are correct.
That's right.
Absolutely. Their advantages also has disadvantages. In that one speech given yesterday and not followed up on over the next 5 and 10 and 20 years is not going to be very effective. This is a problem that's going to be intractable in the short term.
I say, look at history. It is the youth. When the youth get in motion, that's when things change.
Yeah, but Todd's right. They haven't been voting. Now, a lot of these students are going to turn 18 soon, or they may
right.
already
they're
be there.
Part
we'll
of, they're
see.
Part of the Democratic. They're part of the Democratic equation for turning Georgia
right.
blue.
You know, on this thing, one thing I would add, Todd's right. I mean, elections change things. That's where it matters. And one of the things you saw over the weekend was John Kasich, of course,
That's
kind
right.
of putting himself on the other side of the NRA in this equation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't believe that Kasich can get anywhere in a Republican presidential primary in 2020 with that message. But it might be a signal that he's thinking third party.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break, but a couple quick notes. Number one, the White House announced this morning that President Trump said he, in fact, is going to back a bipartisan bill, Chris Murphy of Connecticut, John Cornyn of Texas, who have been working on a measure to strengthen background checks. So, I mean, that's a step, Nan Orrick,
sure.
in a positive direction.
Sure.
The president's also going to be meeting with a group of students. We don't know anything about it. The White House has just said he's going to meet with high school students on Wednesday to talk about school safety. Nevertheless, the president still hasn't talked about guns at all.
Right, right. And this is actually kind of an interesting little announcement of this high school student meeting because Trump's first message was that he would be speaking with governors about the issue several weeks from now.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you know, in the governor's criminal justice reform bill this year, he's got increased penalties for straw purchasers of guns and for those altering gun ID. So that's an interesting door opener.
All right. We've got to get a break in. We're running really late to our first break. This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
Peter Sagal here, and if you're in your car, I want you to try something. Roll up the windows. You're all sealed inside. Take a good smell. Can you smell that? That was the great cologne experiment of 2004. You should not have gone with the dollar store for that one. Well, you can lose that old car smell by donating your vehicle to one of your favorite causes, like public radio. It only takes a few minutes, and just like that, you've supported the station, and well, you are on your way to a life of better smells.
Go to gpb.org/cars and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Jim Galloway, Todd Rehm, Senator Nan Orrick are with me in the studio today. We're going to talk. Let's do this. We know that there's an awful lot that happened over the weekend in relation to the Mueller indictments of 13 Russians and 3 Russian companies. But let's put that off for a few minutes because we have both Nan Orrick, fresh from the battles inside the state Senate, and Todd Rehm, who does a good deal of lobbying, fresh from the battles in the hallways outside the bodies themselves. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening down at the Capitol before we turn to the Russia investigation story. Jim, you have been writing a lot about transit. You've been following it very closely. And again, this weekend, you had a major column saying the time for transit has really arrived, and you cite new reasons why you really believe that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think for the first time, we're seeing this as a legitimate topic of conversation mm-hmm. in a general election situation, even in a Republican primary
That's right.
situation. You've got, I think, at when the Speaker rolled out his House bill, what, 930, I think, It's the House version of the transit bill.
Mm-hmm.
He had Megan Hansen, state representatives Megan Hansen, Beth Beskin, Dorothy Silcox, and Tom Taylor, all Northern Arc material. We had Charlotte Nash out of Gwinnett, Bob Ott out of Cobb, and so you've got you've got it really playing out, and I think especially say in a place like the 6th Senate District, the one that Jen
Jordan, congressional district.
Senate district,
state senate. Buckhead,
Cobb County.
Yeah, that's right. The one that Democrat Jen Jordan won, and Leah Aldridge is the Republican in that race. I think you're going to see this talked about quite a bit. Jordan, and think about how Bill. Think about how unusual this is. Jen Jordan, on the edge of a political campaign, is having a town hall meeting on transit in Smyrna, in Cobb County.
Todd, you're the Republican at the table. I want to get your reaction to that.
Well, what I want to say first is I think that transit is a subset of the bigger issue, which is Metro Atlanta versus everybody else. And over the years that I've lived here, certainly over the years that I've been politically active, the definition of what constitutes Metro Atlanta and whether you're inside or outside that area has vastly expanded. And we've seen a number of statewide bills looking to prohibit this or allow this on a statewide basis. I think that there is going to be a segment of the General Assembly that says, yeah, that transit is great for all y'all in Atlanta, but what do we get out of it?
But isn't that why we have the whole emphasis going on simultaneously about how to expand broadband in rural Georgia, what to do about
healthcare in rural Georgia, failing hospitals, yeah.
I think that's part of it, but another part of the problem is that those are going to be separate bills that are going to be heavily contended on many
but
sides.
But the same people are voting on all of them.
Yeah, I bet you they're going to travel together.
Yeah, the same people are voting, casting votes on all of those issues. And a sizable slice of non-Atlantans come to Atlanta for this, that, or the other. I mean, what's the number now about how many people come in every day to the city? It's astronomical.
but
when you look at the population, you know, half the population, half the voters are in Metro Atlanta. So we've got significant leadership. We've always had Democratic leadership that endorsed, not always, in recent years, in this recent era, we've had Democratic leadership that endorsed these transit bills and this tackling transportation. Now it is owned by GOP leadership, and you've got a bipartisan approach here that I think is going to put something over the goalpost.
But there's a difference between coming into Atlanta for this and that and wanting to pay money out of your pocket for infrastructure that you don't really use.
All right, Nan, let me ask you.
Well, you know, we all pay taxes to Washington, and we have federal transportation dollars coming back in.
All right, so break this down a little bit, Jim. Much of the transit legislation we're looking at would open up for, would give, it within jurisdictions, give citizens the opportunity to weigh in on transit.
That's right.
So it isn't a question of somebody from Bainbridge paying for Metro Atlanta.
Well, in a way. Now you do have different funding mechanisms. If I'm right, the House funding mechanism would be a 50-cent toll on Uber, taxi, limo
right.
rides, plus a tax on concessions at both the Atlanta and the Savannah airport.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I think the Senate bill is more of a flat sales tax, percentage 1% sales tax. So that there's that to be, but to your point, most of the money would be locally raised.
So, Nan Ark, let me ask you about that, though. Todd raises an issue that you all up there have to take into consideration. Will rural legislators, say, support sales tax increases for Metro Transit? So let me ask you a question about process. In the old days, Speaker Tom Murphy from Harrelson County, he really knew how to corral his fellow rural House members to vote for measures that benefited the city of Atlanta first and foremost, the World Congress Center, MARTA itself.
Saw it as benefiting, and he made the argument that it benefited the state's economy. And he was powerful enough that he could win their
vote.
And he had the credibility of being a rural legislator.
Is there a leader? I mean, David Ralston has been a successful speaker all accounts. Can he do the same? Can Casey Cagle do it in the Senate?
Ralston's following and ability to command votes in the House is immeasurable. I mean, he's the man when you come to politics in the House. And I believe firmly that when you put together a Democratic vote with the more moderate wing of the Republicans, be they rural or urban or metro, you've got the vote for transit funding.
Yeah, I would think that, and Todd can correct me if he thinks I'm wrong here, but I think it'll be a harder sell in the Senate. Number one, you've got more people running for statewide office. That makes a difference. In an interview that GPB's lawmakers released last week, you had Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle endorse it in a fashion, but not in specifics. I mean, he was talking about the need to do something, and wouldn't it be nice if we had a transit system where you could look up on your iPhone and get a seat reserved and maybe a cup of coffee at the same time? but it's not specifically an endorsement of the funding mechanism, which I think is going to be the key to this whole thing.
I think Jim's right that the Senate is probably a harder lift in order to get sufficient numbers of Republicans on board. But I think you also then have the age-old rivalry of House against Senate. I don't doubt that that Speaker Ralston can get a bill through the House. I doubt that the House can produce a bill that the Senate will accept easily, or that the Senate will do the opposite.
Well, yeah, never rule out the dance between the two chambers, which just gets almost to the point of being ridiculous at times. But never rule that out, Todd. I completely agree with you. When I do the math in the Senate, we've gotten transportation bills through the Senate before, and it's been with anywhere from 18 Republicans and 18 Democrats.
All right, we'll watch it.
You get 36 votes, and you're well within the margin of safety. Yeah, we'll watch it.
There's no question that transit is a big, big deal down there at the Capitol. But Todd Ream, it's really wonderful to have you in the studio, especially today. Anybody who goes to Georgia pundit knows that you have been one of the strongest advocates out there for the adoption of dogs that are left homeless or in shelters around the state. So you've got a real interest. Tell us about the bill that's been introduced that most of the people who are in your corner believe could be really harmful to organizations that are adopting dogs rather than selling them.
So Senator John Wilkinson is the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee. He basically has devoted his life through the FFA and through the University System of Georgia to Georgia agriculture, and I don't think there's anybody who questions his expertise. He has brought forth a Senate bill. There's an identical House bill by some House members, but the one that's moving so far is Senate Bill 418. And what it is it's a very short bill that will have wide and far-reaching consequences,
right?
Because it essentially says that no city or county or combined government can ban the sale of anything that is regulated by the federal department of the FDA, which is the Food and Drug Administration, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, or the Georgia Department of Agriculture. And so I don't think anybody would try to say that this is not about the bans on retail sales of cats and dogs.
Mm-hmm. There are
about six municipalities in Cherokee County. Sandy Springs recently did it, and I believe there's one somewhere else.
Where they banned the sale of pets, the retail sale of animals.
In order, Sandy Springs went further and said this is specifically to promote adoption. it is being pitched as in many ways as a business-friendly bill that businesses need a uniform set of rules that they can follow across the state. That's the same thing that you will hear about the Airbnb when people talk about banning local bans on Airbnb. It's the same thing that you hear on the booting bill that would authorize booting of cars statewide, that it's a better business.
But your concern is that this measure would allow for the retail sale again of puppies, the puppy mill situation,
right,
and could be very harmful to organizations like the Humane Society, which is trying to find homes for these animals that have no
home. That's one concern. The other concern is that this is yet another move against local control by counties cities.
Nan, it's amazing how much traction you can get when you start talking about people's dogs.
I'll tell you what. I looked on my neighborhood news feed this morning, and every other entry is about animals, either rescuing one or sharing one, or adopting one, or seeing a stray somewhere that need to be picked up, and there's a bipartisan support for this local control over this question of doing whatever can be done to keep the puppy mill industry from just running amok, because it's in the view of people who are animal lovers, it's not a good thing, and we've got better options. And local control will win the votes of some folks that may not be primarily interested in the plight of animals, but they believe in local control.
It's interesting that you're seeing more and more tension, I think, in the Capitol between state governments and local governments over who says what, because there's just a whiff of last year's the previous 3 years debate over religious liberty in this, because one of the central portions of the religious liberty legislation that we had seen was a ban on local governments issuing non-discrimination ordinances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think this also partakes of the difference between rural and urban and suburban, because there is both a different relationship between humans and animals in agricultural areas versus urban and suburban. But there is also, I think, a recognition on the part of some rural lawmakers that they need to take care of some things today for fear of what an even more powerful Metro Atlanta might be. And I think, so for instance, I think that part of what is motivating this is the fear that someday there may be a majority in state government who are willing to vote for restrictions on common livestock practices, or there may be cities that want to ban the retail sales of meat or some other agricultural product.
There would be one, right?
All right, you want to get a last word in real quick?
No, this is moving on. On the question of adoption, the adoption of Georgia's children that need a stable, permanent homes is being monkeyed with again with this RFRA language. I call it the religious discrimination bill.
William Ligon has a bill moving separately from the adoption bill that was in such caused so much controversy a while ago. Ligon's bill would, in fact, though, impose restrictions on anybody who wanted to try to. It would allow religious organizations that are adoption agencies
to refuse gay couples. And really, you know, we need to be looking for more families that are good, secure caregivers and love havens for Georgia's children, not banning people based on their gender.
Okay, I got to play timekeeper right here. We got to get our final break of the show out of the way. Let's do that. When we come back, I want to hear about one of your big priorities, whatever it might be, Nan Orrick, for the legislative session, and then we'll talk a bit about Trump and the Russians.
On the next Fresh Air,
I like you exactly as you are.
We mark the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on public TV. We have a tribute and listen back to Terry's 1984 interview with Fred Rogers. Also, actor Doug Jones, who plays the sea creature in the Oscar-nominated film The Shape of Water. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 right here on your GPB station.
During the break, I asked Senator Nan Orrick, who's with us, along with Todd Rehm and Jim Galloway today, what do you want to talk about in terms of talking about the bill that you're most interested in? And she immediately reeled off about seven, which just shows you she is an active member of the state Senate. But there's one issue that concerns you a great deal, isn't there?
Well, I have seen this for years, tear apart the General Assembly and send the wrong message, and that is these bills that are concocted to be anti-immigrant in nature. The package of them is being called Adios Amazon because they are bills that pull up the welcome mat. HB 66 put fees on wire transfers of money out across state lines. That's directly targeting our refugee community and our migrant community who send money home.
And it's one of those measures that comes out of a national conservative think tank.
That's right.
And there are legislatures around the country, Republicans in them, that sponsor the legislation. And there's a number of issues like that.
Sure.
But go ahead.
SB 161 is the driver's license bill, which would make you have a different looking driver's license if you're not native born or naturalized. The governor has opposed that for years. It's hostile to the international community. And Senate Resolution 587 is the English only bill, which has bounced around Georgia legislature and legislature across the country as a wedge issue bill for a good two decades.
And also, Jim Galloway, a measure that Josh McCoon, running for Secretary of State, is more than happy
right.
to have as part of his resume again this session.
That's right.
Right. Let me see. The calendar, according to the current calendar, the last day of the session is March
29th.
The 29th of March, and the crossover day is the 28th
March,
of
okay.
February.
March 29th. But it seems to me that this legislature could really change directions very, very quickly if Amazon.com makes its decision before the 29th.
So, Nan Orrick, are these measures going to get these are the kinds of measures to get through your body, but they're always blocked in the House.
The message that this sends to the rest of the world about Georgia, are we a welcoming state? Are we putting out the welcome mat? Are we ready for the business community? You cannot say that we're a state that's good for business and you continually package and try to pass all these anti-immigrant bills. If they get smashed, then that's a good message. But that along with the RFRA bill, these wedge issues that look backward rather than forward. And, you know, something that we don't have time to discuss today, but the governor's tax bill is right on the verge. There'll be a press conference
tomorrow.
He's
got a news conference tomorrow.
That's right. Got a news conference tomorrow. So that'll be something I know you'll be talking about going forward. And we have not resolved the fact that we have one of the highest rates of uninsured people in Georgia, and we have still not created a pathway to coverage for all. And that screams out loud that it leaves rural Georgia and rural hospitals still going down
the clinker. Nan Orrick, we look forward to your coming back here the day after the session, being on the show and telling us you've taken care of every one of the measures you just talked about. Todd, you want to weigh in?
As far as the Amazon question, I think that there are people outside of Metro Atlanta who I don't think see an effect on their district one way or the other. From the Amazon legislation and don't really care about whether Atlanta gets 50,000 additional jobs. But in terms of putting out the welcome mat for companies like Amazon, there is a difference between putting out the welcome mat and giving them the keys to your home and offering to load up all your groceries and your TV into
their
car.
And that's not what I'm supporting. I'm not supporting that.
But there mm-hmm. there are those who believe that the more that we do to change the distinctiveness of Georgia as a state apart from other states, the more we become just another money-chasing state.
And look, we do give up part of the soul of Georgia.
But let me say one thing. This huge caring about 50,000 jobs, and you're right, 50,000 jobs that would be Atlanta-based. I say put that money in expanding Medicaid, and you create 50,000 jobs across the state.
Galloway, you want to get a word in
that.
Here?
Argue with that.
Galloway?
Well, my goodness. Okay. Number one, I would say, Todd, yeah, you've got a lot of Georgia that doesn't care whether or not Amazon.com comes, but they do care about what the governor thinks and how the governor thinks of them when it comes to the budget. So there's a little bit of there's a velvet glove right there with that's pretty hard. Yes,
but it's different because it's his last set of budgets as well.
Yeah,
I think we've seen some pushback, particularly thinking of the federal versus state income tax issue that we would not have seen before.
You're right. But to your point, I think you've got an excellent point when you say that we're bringing people in and it changes us and that bothers us. I saw that during the debate, this last debate last year over whether to extend tax credits to the music industry, you know, in the hopes that it would bring more musicians here. You know, there were Republicans that stood up and said, do we really want musicians here?
Well, we send the message that we don't.
And the answer to that was, well, they'll all be writing Christian music.
So. Well, you know, Georgia, sadly, is about 49th in the gang of funding the arts, speaking of music. And I know it's 11 cents per capita that we spend in Georgia. Minnesota spends $17 per capita.
Right.
We have a lot of challenges ahead of us, not to mention infant mortality rates and the need to fund our schools fully.
All right, we're running a little bit short on time, but I've been promising, excuse me, to get to it. The indictments that Department of Justice handed down on Friday from Special Prosecutor, Special Counsel Robert Mueller went before a grand jury. They indicted 13 Russians, 3 Russian organizations, 4 essentially plotting to interfere with and actively interfering through social media and other means with the elections as far back as 2014 through the election day and beyond. And I just thought that it would be just instructive. It was a breathtaking document to read, I thought. Mm. Stunning how the Russians planned and executed their messaging in social media. One of the organizations that was created by the Russians was a group called the Heart of Texas. They put together a Houston rally called Stop the Islamization of Texas. And in 2016, they had that rally. But at the same time they created that organization, they created another organization called United Muslims of America. They had a rally on that same day at the same location called Save Islamic Knowledge, and it was all designed for these organizations to clash. Jim, it's breathtaking.
Stunning.
And then, of course, they went on to post thousands and thousands of messages on social media condemning Hillary Clinton, painting her as Hitler, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, if there's a bright spot in all this, it may be the fact that maybe we don't hate each other as much as we think.
Get the Russians out of the picture and we'll all be peace. Todd, when you see some of the tweet storm that the president was on this weekend, It really, the one that started it, I think, that started causing the most attention was very sad that the FBI missed all of the many signals sent out by the Florida school shooter. This is not acceptable. They are spending too much time trying to prove Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. There is no collusion. Get back to the basics and make us all proud. Conflating two completely different matters, right?
I have settled on my survival strategy for both Lent and for the remainder of the Trump term or terms of office, and that is to spend as little time as possible paying attention to his Twitter. If I look at the results that have come out, including tax reform, including a different approach to foreign relations, as a Republican, I can be okay with a lot of that if I just don't pay attention to the tweets. That said, I'm not terribly impressed with this Russian operation. I am waiting for the perp walk of Boris Badenov and Natasha Fatale, because it reminded me it's kind of goofy. And I'm not sure, absent collusion with one of the campaigns, I'm not sure what the real serious crimes were for. We're talking about political speech,
yeah,
that in the United States is even when you pay for it in rubles, is still constitutionally protected.
But I will tell you, the most interesting thing in that happened outside the indictment of the 13, there was another fellow in California, a data specialist, who was also arrested. I think he pleaded guilty, as a matter of fact, in association with this.
That was a guy who was basically selling fake IDs on the internet.
Exactly.
That's
the process. That's part of the process. The other thing I would just as in point of fact, yes, the FBI missed a call, but so did Florida DFACS. They missed a couple calls, and I think the sheriff's department in Parkland, there were a couple of dozen opportunities for law enforcement. It was a number of people missing.
I wasn't discussing that, but one of the problems with saying that they missed opportunities is that we don't yet put people in police custody for being scary and saying stupid things.
All right, but wait, I want to go
back.
Well, we do involuntary commitments for people to get checked out. We are really running short on time, and Nan Orrick, I want to give you a chance on this. Todd's comment that he's not terribly concerned about this because what's the crime? That's all well and good, perhaps, but the scope of the manipulation is staggering without regard to whether they're going to ever end up in jail, because they're not.
And it's interference in our body politic and our democracy by a foreign power with malice aforethought and a president sitting in the White House who wants to totally dismiss the entire thing. It's almost like a nightmare to think that the GOP is willing to tolerate Russian interference in our politics. Let me think about this. What's happened to the GOP? That's not the party that they used to be.
You have 30 seconds, Todd.
When the sum total of indictments and guilty pleas is some dude forging fake IDs, it's just not impressive. It really is a ham-handed
creating political rallies in this country to stir up animus between Muslims and non-Muslims, and we dismiss it with a wave of the hand?
Remember, we don't hate each other as much as they say we are.
All right.
I'm not a hater of Todd. Todd and I have a lot of shared interests.
We are completely out of time. We didn't even get to talk about Jim Galloway. The fact that this is a great thing for people like us up at our age. We may have a 78-year-old run for president in 2020, or 77, but 78 if he were to be elected and take office. Joe Biden's really thinking he may get in.
He is placing calls to Georgia Democrats saying, is this still a good number for you?
Oh, my gosh. Well, that, we say this a lot, but that will really be interesting to watch unfold. Senator Nan Orrick, Todd Rehm, Jim Galloway, thank you for being here. Tyler Morris is back at the board, our engineer. He's been gone learning about audio engineering even more than he already knows. We're thrilled you're back, Tyler. Thank you, Olivia. Thank you, Tom Faust, for your work. By the way, Friday, we're taking our show on the road again locally. We're going to be over at the State Bar of Georgia, Jim, where we're going to do the show live in front of a big audience of journalists, judges, attorneys. We better be on our best behavior.
Wow.
We need a lawyer, and we'll have them.
That's it for us. We're back Wednesday at 2. I'm Bill Nigut. See you then.